Flame fans, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You guys put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, happy Tuesday, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It is Tuesday, May 13th. With Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, my name is Pat Steinberg. We're underway on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Hello, Wes.
Hello, Pat.
It is. I'm really glad that we were able to keep this going in the summertime. This being our weekly chats with Megan Mickelson, the color voice of the Flames, continues to join us once a week as we move towards the summer, and she joins us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, Mick. Happy Tuesday.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you, friend? What's happening in your world?
I am good. I currently just shut dinner off to feed the kiddos here, so that the fire alarm won't go off again during the middle of our hit. So
that's planning ahead.
So we're set. I'm ready.
True.
I'm on the
pro.
Ball today.
A true pro. That's how you win gold medals, is preparation like that. That's what I like to see. Hey, I was thinking about some topics to throw at you, Mick, and I don't know why this popped into my head, but I thought it'd be a good way to start off as we kind of look back on the season and look ahead to next year. And as the world championship continues, you are a former multi-capped Team Canada member with your gold medals and all of what you did representing the country. And we know that the Flames have Mackenzie Weegar representing Canada at the World Championship right now for the second time in 3 years. And when Ryan Huska joined us a couple of years ago, he's also over there as an assistant coach. I asked him this question. I said, you know, Ryan, like, in your mind, did everybody talk enough about Mackenzie Weegar this year? We talked so much about the year Jonathan Huberdeau had and his bounce back. We talked about Nazem Kadri's 35-goal season. Obviously, Dustin Wolfe was such a big talking point throughout the year. But you're the former defender. Like, in your eyes, did we talk enough about how important Mackenzie Weegar was to the Flames this year?
Well, I feel like I talked enough about how important he was, because on our pregame show, the hits that I do with you, it was like very frequently that I was like, oh, I should talk about Mackenzie Weegar, because he was, you know, just leading the defense in so many categories, you know, or, you know, at the top, at least time on ice, and leading the NHL. He was always either kind of, I would say, the second half of the season, either first or second in loose puck recoveries and total defensive plays. So, you know, for me, I felt like on the broadcast, especially as well, I was, you know, frequently just saying, you know, Mackenzie Weegar, he continues to do everything. He continues to be great at getting shots through from the point, you know, playing big minutes, blocking big shots. He does it all back there. He, you know, advances the puck. He contributes offensively. The way that him and Joel Hanley and the chemistry that they found. You know, I don't think that there was a point in the season outside of when, you know, we know that he was injured after blocking a shot to the foot, where he wasn't completely and totally stellar and outstanding. So, you know, I feel like during the games, for sure, you know, I talked about him a ton and just how important he was. And by the end of the season, I was saying that he was the most valuable defenseman on the Calgary Flames over the course of this season. And, you know, I definitely would stick to that. I think another thing that really stood out for me about him, and it just sort of continued to evolve over the course of the season was his leadership. And, you know, just what a great leader he's become on this team and for this group. And one thing that stood out to me was when Zane Parekh did his media exit interview and he said that, you know, the guys had gone out or whatever, and he spent 3 hours sitting there talking to Mackenzie Weegar. And there's that leadership right there. And, you know, he's not only a guy on the back end who's doing it all in all situations, literally, he's also a huge role model and a great support for the young guys that are coming up in this organization. So it's great to see him representing Canada as well. I remember talking to him after he came back and, you know, after winning the World Championship gold medal with Canada the last time. And we had a good chat and, you know, we're talking about how much pride there is, you know, representing your country, but also how cool it is to win gold for Canada. It's just it's a whole different beast when you get to do something like that. So I know that how much, you know, this opportunity means to him, and I hope they come home with another gold.
Mick, I think we all think of Mackenzie Weegar as one of those guys who certainly makes his defense partner better. But as the Flames look longer term, and maybe it's a reunion with Joel Hanley, who's an unrestricted free agent, or, you know, maybe it's another direction. Do you have not necessarily a player name, but is there a profile of player that you think can help bring out or continue to bring out the best in Weegar?
Well, I think the good thing with Mackenzie Weegar is that he can play either the right or the left side. So whether it's a right or a left shot defenseman, you know, that doesn't restrict him in any way. I do really think that Mackenzie Weegar and his skill set, it leads to a lot of offensive upside. And that's not something that all defensemen have. We know that. But it's, you know, it's definitely something that I really think he's improved that area of his game drastically, his puck poise and patience. But just, you know, some of the moves that he was making over the course of the season, like dangles, I guess you could say. So, you know, I think that that's something that the coaching staff will want to continue to get out of him. Obviously, being on the power play, whether or not he's first or second unit moving forward, you know, I imagine that down the road, Zane Parekh would take over, you know, first power play responsibilities. But you know, he's a guy with a lot of offensive upside. So I do think that he needs to play with someone who is reliable from a defensive standpoint. Now, I don't think that has to be, you know, a tried and true stay at home defenseman, a guy who, you know, can't contribute offensively. But I just think that it's someone that has to be responsible in their own end, responsible through the middle of the ice in the neutral zone, that will allow Mackenzie Weegar to really maximize his offensive game. I think that that's really important.
Yeah. The reason I brought it up to Husk and then brought it up to you is because I feel like I kind of, without not being intentional, because the guy had his best season yet as a member of the Flames, probably his best season ever in the NHL. But I feel like, you know, a lot was talked. We talked. I talked on post game shows or this program or whatever so much about, because Huberdeau has been such a hot button topic over the last three seasons, and Kadri was such a tone setter, and obviously Wolf was so crucial to this team. I kind of feel like I was guilty of not talking enough about Weegar this year and how good he was. So I wanted to make sure that we gave him a little bit of love with you. And I knew, and I also knew how much that you were a fan of his game all season long. And that was not lost on me either. So I'm glad we could do that. And then here's another guy. It's Megan Mickelson with Pat and Wes here on this hour of Flames Talk. Mick joins us once a week on Flames Talk, the color voice of the Flames. Another guy that you talked a lot about this year, and I know we're a huge fan of his game. Now, Kevin Ball is not signed, but that'll get done, and we all know that Ball was a big part of the Jacob Markstrom return about a year ago. How important is Kevin Ball in your eyes to this group going forward?
Well, going forward, I think he's hugely important. I think, you know, for me, the defense core as a whole, it needs to have balance, or the best ones that I've played on anyways, they have different types of players that bring different things. And I think that, you know, he's 24 years old, he's young, but he is, like, he's big. And I feel like over the course of the season, he, you know, started to use his body a little bit more and was playing, you know, he wasn't throwing big open ice hits or anything, but just being strategic about the way that he was using his size. He led the NHL almost all season long in stick check. So, you know, he has a really good stick, but it's just that ability to be a real shutdown defender. Like we talk about Mackenzie Weegar and the offense that he brings, you know, how valuable that is. Well, the defensive aspects of Kevin Ball's game and just, you know, how good he was and how he really seemed to me anyways, kind of settle into that role and the way that they want him to play on this team. So I think, you know, having a guy like him with his age, the size that he has, he's, you know, got some good boots on him. He can skate, he can move. I think that's really important, especially you look at the future of the organization and where they're trying to go, how they're trying to build over the next few years. I think Kevin Ball, to me anyways, got better as the season went on. There was, you know, a dip, I believe it was in January, February, where both him and Rasmus were struggling quite a bit and racked up a lot of those minuses. But to me, overall, you know, from a defensive standpoint, having a big guy who can play that shutdown role, block shots, be physical, he was more and more imposing in front of the net. In front of Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar as well. So I think that he's a guy, like I said, I think that his overall play to me got better over the course of the season. And I think that as a young player at the age of 24, like I said, he's going to continue to get better and better.
Well, and Wes, it's a big reason why I think with Ball, and I think that there's, as Mick says, like still 24, turning 25 years old. And yet, I also think if you're the Flames, you've got a pretty good idea as to the type of player you've got going forward. You have a pretty good idea as to what he is, and it's why I think the Flames are I don't know how far away we are from this happening, but I think it's why the Flames are quite comfortable in going long-term with Ball. I think if the Flames had their druthers, they'd be perfectly comfortable going 5 or 6 years with a player like that because of all of what Mick just mentioned there.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd like another Kevin Ball. They'd probably be willing to go long term with two of them. I was thinking about Kevin Ball as Mick was talking about sort of the ideal defense partner for Mackenzie Weegar and okay, well, here's a guy who has a ton of offensive ability, and so you need kind of that rock solid partner, so he's willing or sort so he's comfortable, I'm sorry, to take some risks. And so when I think of the future of the Flames blue line on the right side, whether it includes Rasmus Anderson or not, you've got Mackenzie Weegar there, led the team in assists this season. You've got Hunter Brustevich and Zane Parekh there, two really exciting young prospects that are high-end offensive players. And so what are you going to need in fairly long supply? Well, you're going to need those sort of steady stay-at-home partners on the left side. And for that reason, yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And I'll throw this back over to you, Mick, but it makes not only sense to lock up Kevin Ball for a few more years if you can, but, you know, you'd love to have a couple more just like him.
Yeah, either just like him or similar to him with, like, a little bit more offensive upside.
Right.
And I hate to, like, make the comparison, but, like, kind of a Noah Hanifin type,
right.
But a right-handed shot, I think. You know, someone who can skate, who can move, who's physical, and who can defend, but who can also transport the puck really well. I think, you know, to me, that's one thing that that's something Mackenzie Weegar does pretty well, is he can haul the puck up the ice. I think that if they had another defenseman who could skate the puck really well, I think that would help them out a lot in getting out of their defensive end. And that was something Ryan Huska talked about, you know, towards the end of the season, was giving up less high danger chances. Well, to do that, you can't spend as much time in your own zone. How do you prevent that from happening? Well, you got to get out of your own zone, obviously. And to do that, you need really good puck moving defensemen. You know, I think that they all move the puck quite well, but to have another guy who can skate the puck, that's something that I've definitely thought about.
Even Chris Tanev was a pretty good example of that sort of mix, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Of a guy who can play that shutdown role, but can also skate it to safety when you need him to.
Yeah, maybe still even a little bit more offense than Chris Tanev. Yeah, just, you know, getting shots through, you know, from the point in the offensive zone. But, you know, it's that ability to evade pressure when, you know, you have pressure coming in on the forecheck and, you know, the guys who can, it's a real skill to have, you know, the ability to read pressure and then to have the hands to get away from that pressure, but then to have the skating ability also to find the middle of the ice. Because ultimately, like, that's the primary goal. You know, sometimes you have to go off the glass and out, or you kind of high flip it into the neutral zone, or, you know, you give it to the forwards or the wingers, and that's how you exit your zone. But if you're a defenseman skating the puck, you want to get to the middle of the ice. And that's, you know, a tough skill to really master. And I think if the Flames could find another defenseman who could do that, they would be in a good spot.
Poor Chris Tanev has a 2-point night in the second round of the playoffs, and Mick still isn't impressed. Come on.
I mean, in general, and you know, I love Chris Tanev, so.
Yes,
you know, I love the guy.
It's been fun.
Who doesn't?
It's been so much fun watching him this postseason as well.
Oh, yeah.
Last one for you. Megan Mickelson's with us, color voice of the Flames. Wes and I spent a good chunk of Monday's show talking about Adam Klapka, as Vickers sent us an interview from the World Championship with Klapka, as he's over there with Team Czechia. We saw Klapka do things. I'll be perfectly honest. Like, I was not expecting at any point to see this season or period Adam Klapka being on a line with Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau. And, you know, we saw it in that game. What was it? The San Jose game? Yeah, it was the San Jose game where he got bumped up in that game that it felt like they might lose and it might be an absolute dagger to their season, Mick. And then all of a sudden that injury happens and Pospisil goes out and Klapka gets bumped up onto that line and never looked back the rest of the season playing with Kadri and Huberdeau. Such a cool way for him to end the season. But what's your feel on Adam Klapka going into next season?
Yeah, you know, when that stuff happens, like when a player goes down and then someone else gets an opportunity as a result, and it has a significant impact on Adam Klapka and how he's going to go into next season. It's just crazy how, you know, all of those things work out. I remember when Pospisil went down and Klapka went up onto that line, he's having all kinds of success. It's like, man, hockey's such a weird game, just in the way that, you know, things happen and players get opportunities. But, you know, it's exactly what it was for him. It was a massive opportunity. But I also think that the timing was really perfect in that, you know, he had some success over the course of the season when he was up with the Flames, but I think for the most part, like, he kind of struggled to figure out how he needed to play and be impactful and effective at the NHL level. And we sort of saw him struggle with, you know, trying to make moves, you know, whether it was inside of the blue line, turning the puck over, maybe trying to be a little bit too skilled and turning the puck over as a result. Maybe not using his speed or his body as much. But I really think that by the end of the season, he figured out the type of game that he needs to play. And that's a really, like, straight line, simple, direct game. You know, he's going up and down his wing, north, south, what a huge advantage he has with that reach of his size. He has a ton of speed as well. And I think that he figured out that those are the strengths that he needs to focus on and play with first, is his speed and his size. And then getting to the right areas, which we saw at the end of the season, that was to the front of the net. Mm-hmm. And then the goals and the points come from there. So, you know, I think that just the timing with the opportunity and then the experience that he had all season long. And, you know, you have to credit Craig Conroy and the coaching staff for, you know, being patient with him and bringing him up and then sending him down and bringing him up. And, you know, credit to him as well for really just sticking with it until the perfect opportunity popped up. So I think he's set himself up really nicely heading into training camp next year. I do think that camp and the first, you know, 5 to 10 games of the season, if he makes the roster out of camp, are going to be crucial for Adam Klapka, just in terms of what the season is going to look like. So I think he's in a great spot now. I think he's put the work in. He knows how he needs to play, but now he needs to show up in the fall, and then he needs to play that way consistently. So yeah, in a great spot, but you know, I think that there's still work to be done for him, but it's great to see him find that success. He's such a nice guy off the ice, always smiling. So it's nice to see him having finally found a bit of a groove.
Great stuff, Mick. Awesome stuff as always. That was a lot of fun. And is dinner done now, or do you still need to go put finishing touches on it?
Finishing touches. Okay. Mostly done.
Okay.
I'm in a good spot.
What's for dinner?
I'm on it.
What's for dinner tonight?
Sweet potato gnocchi with meatballs and roasted cauliflower and broccoli.
Wow. Who are you?
I'll see if my 6-year-old eats it.
Come on, Berkeley. That's a lot. Sounds like
fingers crossed.
That sounds quite delicious. All right, get out of here, Chef Mick. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Bye, friend. Megan Mickelson is the color voice of the Calgary Flames, and she joins us every week here on Flames Talk. She joins us with Pat and Wes on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Pat and Wes along with you on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. And this is the final segment of Flames Talk for a little while. We are on hiatus until after the May long weekend. We're only missing 3 shows when it's all said and done, or 3 days. But with the long weekend and Monday not being a regular podcast or broadcast day, we'll be back with you on, I guess that would be Tuesday the 20th when we return. Pat and Wes coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. So here are some of the big things that we've been talking about over the last number of weeks since the season came to an end, and some of the things that we'll be continuing to watch going into a little mini hiatus. And one of those things is Dustin Wolf. Now, nothing is going to get done with the Flames and Dustin Wolf between now and when we're back. In fact, nothing can get done officially until Canada Day at the very earliest when it comes to number 32 in his contract. And I was, you know, we talked a lot about it. It was about a little less than a week ago when we were out at Max Bell for the Centennial Cup, and we were talking about how urgent the Flames would want to get a contract done. And I was just doing some digging and talking to some different people around the league and about what a Dustin Wolf contract could end up looking like. And I just a few things. As much as I think the Flames would love to get something done, if possible, at the earliest convenience, I also wonder if the waiting game might end up being what we see on both sides, because I think that from a numbers perspective, there's going to be a lot of, I don't know, just a lot of back and forth in terms of what that number might end up looking like. So was just, we've talked so much about the Jeremy Swayman deal and some of the, you know, Jake Ottinger's number. I know Jordan Binnington's a contract that we've thrown around a few times as a comparable. But the most recent one is Swayman and his 8-year deal signed in October, 8 times $8.25 million. The big difference there and why the Wolf contract maybe could come in a little bit lower on a Swayman deal or compared to a Swayman deal is that Wolf still only has the 1 year of NHL experience under his belt. You know, much like Coronado, that Coronado number was kept lower than a Matt Boldy or a Dylan Gunther or a Juraj Slafkovský or a Dylan Cousins. The number was less for Coronado, I think, in large part because he had just the 1 year of NHL experience under his belt. And, you know, much like Coronado, the same is true for Wolf. This was his first full season in the NHL, whereas Jeremy Swayman had kind of two seasons at least, if not two and a half seasons of, yeah, probably about two and a half seasons of work under his belt. And never as a bona fide one. He was splitting with Linus Ullmark, but he had a 914 over 41 games, a 920 over 37 games, and a 916 over 44 games leading into him signing that big contract. We all know what Wolf did this year, but he only has the 1 year of doing it.
Right.
And I wonder if that might give the Flames a little leverage in being able to keep the number down a little under Swayman. Like, could they get it under 8 and have it starting with a 7? If the answer to that question is yes, I think the fact that Dustin only has the 1 year of NHL experience instead of 3 years of being on an NHL roster might help their case in that regard.
It could, and I'm sure, you know, that's something that they'll hope for or push for, and yet, you know, knowing sort of the smarts on the side of the Wolf camp.
Just that Pat Brisson guy.
Dustin's a pretty smart cookie in his own regard.
And this is not in a bad way at all. This is what makes Dustin who he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not short on belief in who he is. And I think that is such a crucial part of everything when talking about Dustin Wolf. It's why he's a Calder Trophy finalist this year, because this guy believes in himself. And probably throughout his career, he believes in himself more than anybody ever has believed in him.
Yeah, and I guess that's where if the Flames are hoping to get a bit of a break in negotiations based on Dustin Wolf's lack of NHL time, you know, the delicate balance there is you still want Dustin Wolf to take the long-term deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to be really cautious that Dustin Wolf doesn't say, okay, well, if I haven't played in the NHL for long enough, you know, Jeremy Swayman had 3 years of pretty close to full-time NHL workload. And so, okay, well, give me the 2-year bridge deal and we can circle back then. I just want to warn you guys that the Swayman deal might not be the most obvious comparable at that point. If I've had two more good years, we've had two more seasons of potential for another goaltender to set the market, then maybe that becomes more of a home run contract. And so that's probably the delicate balance that I see there, buddy. I think the reason that the Swayman deal becomes such an obvious replica or at least starting point for me is that the ages were very similar when signed. You know, the teams took a very similar approach in that they'd cleared the deck. That, you know, the Bruins traded Linus Ullmark, the Flames traded Jacob Markstrom. You know, they created opportunity for those guys. And so, but the signing age is probably the big one for me. While the NHL experience won't be the same, the reason that Dustin Wolf doesn't have more NHL experience is because of the way that the Flames wanted to slow cook him. And I think we've seen evidence already that was probably a really wise decision. There's no doubt that Dustin Wolf was ready for prime time when they did make him a full-time NHLer, and yet I don't know that you can necessarily get a huge cut rate just based on that.
Well, and here's another reason why I wonder if the waiting game continues a little bit longer, because I think the most immediate now, like the next immediate comparable, we've got Swayman, who signed last year at the age of 25, almost 26. He turned he signed in early October and then turned 26 in November. Dustin's 24 right now, just turned 24 last month,
but signed for one more year.
Signed for one more year. Yes,
he will
be about 6 months behind turning 26 when the deal kicks in. Yeah, but the guy that to maybe keep an eye on would be Lucas Dostal. Is it Dostal or Dostal? Depends on who you ask. I go Dostal. Cronin always called him Dostal, but coaches aren't always your best read on
pronunciators.
Joe Hanley, after all. But Lucas Dostal in Anaheim would be the next guy to watch for because very, very similar results on teams that I think exceeded expectations. The Flames exceeded expectations to a larger extent than the Ducks did this year, but the Ducks definitely took a step and they were in the mix and still playing relevant hockey into April. And Dostal was a huge reason why. Dostal finished 17th over at Money Puck in goal saved above expected. Dustin was 22. And then that's at all situations. And then Dustin was 7th at 5-on-5. Dostal was 15th. So both guys were amongst the better goaltenders in the NHL in terms of saves above expected or goals saved above expected. And Dostal is a restricted free agent right now. He does not have a contract for next season. I think it's clear who Anaheim's number one is going forward. And while they haven't gone the Markstrom road with Gibson yet, I think that we're now in that kind of limbo land where John Gibson probably isn't a Duck for that much longer. He had a great bounce back year too, so there's never been a better time for the Ducks to trade Gibson. And so it feels like now is Dostal's time. And I'm just really curious what the Ducks do, what Verbeek does. He's been a very interesting guy to watch in terms of how he goes about his cap business. And I just wonder where the Ducks go with Dostal. And if they go long-term, now you've got kind of two contracts to work with as comparables. You've got Swayman in Boston, and you've got Dostal in Anaheim. And I wonder if that might be one of those contracts to watch and why this waiting game. I mean, again, we can't be talking about Wolf signing a contract until July 1st anyway, but I wonder if both sides, and maybe specifically the Flames side of things, might be really interested in what that Dostal deal ends up looking like.
I think you know, from a Flames standpoint, you hope that the Dostal contract comes in a little bit lower than you anticipated. And that does give you some perhaps negotiating power. I think, like, let's not get this twisted, though. The way it should work is the Dustin Wolf contract should set the market for Lucas Dostal, not the other way around. It's just because Dostal is a year in advance, he's probably going to have to sign his sooner. But like, if you look at you rattled off a couple of numbers that I think you had them flip-flopped on. If you look at just the obvious sort of the numbers that jump right off NHL.com, Dustin Wolf had more wins by 6, more starts by 4, a vastly better goals against average and a slightly better save percentage. He also had an awards nomination. Dostal obviously didn't. When they were both in the AHL, Dustin made a habit of collecting the Goalie of the Year award. Dostal didn't. And then the big one, probably for me, being the point percentage at the end of the season in terms of what percentage of points did the Flames get with Wolf between the pipes versus Dostal. Yeah. For all of those stats favor Dustin. And so you're not looking at it and saying, well, Dostal settled for 7 a year, and so that's what we're going to be able to pay Dustin Wolf. Whatever Dostal gets, Dustin Wolf, based just on the most obvious numbers, is in position to ask for more. I think from a Flames standpoint.
Now, have we not talked to Kevin Woodley enough, though, to realize that goals against and save percentage are maybe not the most telling?
You are not going to find enough numbers to put Lucas Dostal in the driver's seat over Dustin
Wolf. I don't think he's in the driver's seat. I just think that maybe they're a little bit closer in terms of who they are than maybe you're giving credit for. I think Dostal is was one of the better goalies in the NHL this year.
So what do you envision in terms of, like, let's say the Dostal contract comes out, what does it mean to Dustin Wolf?
I think it just it provides more of a range for the Flames. That's all.
Sure.
And I think it will come in under Swayman. I don't know, as it should.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Ducks are going long on Dosta. I don't know where those negotiations are, but I think it just gives you another interesting, I don't think it necessarily does anything directly.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it gives you a little bit more of, in the last, whatever that would be, 8 months, it would give you a little bit more of, okay, here's two goalies
sure.
who mean the same to their team and are in the same age range and have put up similar-ish, comparable-ish results
yeah.
to give you a little bit more of a range if you're the Flames. And if you're Pat Brisson, you might say, yeah, we don't care. This is like it may not matter to the Wolf camp. I'm just saying that might be one additional comparable the Flames might have.
Yeah.
Recent comparable.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the Flames will hope that that presents a bigger range between Swayman's 8.25 AAV and Dostal's.
And it may not.
Let's say it starts with a 6. You better hope it doesn't come in at 7.75, because then you really better buckle up for negotiations. Yeah. But yeah, I do think you kind of hope for the best, just like other teams with young scorers on the wing will now be looking at the Coronado contract and saying, okay, well, how does this impact our guy, right? Every contract that gets signed, you know, we've talked about the Rasmus Anderson extension and whether Neil Pionk's deal, like those comparables are constantly happening. I just think, because from my never been an agent or a general manager vantage point, the Swayman one is such an ideal comparable. It's kind of hard to squirm your way away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree that the Swayman one is not irrelevant. I do.
It's not going to be, no matter what happens in the meantime.
All this to say is, I don't know if I'm expecting July 2nd a Dustin Wolf extension. As much as I think the Flames should try to see if they could get it done, it would be, the more I think about it, the more I wonder if this, you know, not drags on in a bad way. I don't think it'll ever become acrimonious. I just wonder if it might be a little bit more of a prolonged discussion when it's all said and done.
I think that's perfectly fair. One of the great strengths of Craig Conroy's predecessor in the GM chair in Brad Treliving was, you know, one of his best traits, I think, as a GM was the extensions he could get for players he already had on his roster, right? We look at, we're still talking about what a great value the Rasmus Anderson deal is. We talked about what a great value for several seasons the Elias Lindholm deal was. That was one of Brad Treliving's, you know, if you're making a sort of checklist, what did he do really well and where did he have his misses? Found great value in getting his guys extended. And I think Craig Conroy probably learned a lot from that. I think he found good value, at least on first blush, in that Matt Coronado extension. We all liked the Yegor Sharangovich deal.
When it happened,
although this season, Yegor probably didn't make it look like quite as good of a deal as Craig Conroy was hoping he would, but it's early, right? Like, so you look at and say, okay, well, if he can be really good as extending his guys, let's see what happens with Zarian Ball. That would be a big boon for the Flames, and Wolf is going to be one of those contracts that if he gets the long-term deal we think the Flames will want to chase, that they're going to be measuring that one for a long time.
Yep.
He's the most important player on the team.
Yeah.
And that's not about to change.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really fascinated to see how this plays itself out over the next, I don't know, here we are in May, so that'd be in the next 13 and a half months. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays itself out, or longer.
Feels like we might talk about it again.
No.
No.
Number 32, what did he do this year? Rasmus Anderson. I don't know if that needs to be done anytime soon either.
I think that one's going to drag out a little bit. I think both.
You can't, unless you get a deal that knocks your socks off in a trade and you're like, we can't, like, we have to do this.
I think it's going to take a while for both sides to get their footing on that one.
I think you at the very least have to find out what the... And you have a pretty good idea now, I'm sure, but when you can really get down to brass tacks on July 1st, I think you need to, at the very least, get a really good gauge on how far apart each side is on a contract negotiation.
And they'll respect exactly what Rasmus Anderson told us on exit day at the Saddledome, which is that he's probably not going to have those conversations with his wife and family until after the World Championships anyways. And so, you know, certainly some kind of time to reflect there, some time to just let this past season sizzle for a little bit. And then, that's going to be an interesting one. I just don't think we have an answer one way or the other on July 1st.
I feel like, and we talked about this as well, I feel like, you know, there's at the very least from a Flame standpoint, we talked to Mick about this earlier this hour. There's a framework on Kevin Ball and what that extension might look like. I think there's a framework on what the Connor Zary deal might look like as well. I think both sides are likely looking bridge. You could make the argument that going long-term could pay off for the Flames, but, you know, much like Dustin Wolf, Connor Zary's he's got a lot of belief in who he is as a player, and I don't know if we'll give you 7 years at $3.5 million. I don't know if that is the type of thing that's going to convince the Zary camp. So I'm kind of, that feels like a bridge. I think at some point Ball and that conversation ends up being a little bit longer term. And I still wonder a little bit on the whole idea of Frost and arbitration and what that might end up looking like. I don't think they end up getting to arbitration.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that, the threat of that ends up being the threat of arbitration maybe makes the most impact on the Frost negotiations.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I'm really curious what happens moving forward at center. You know, I wrote today for Post Media, and I feel strongly that the Flames need to continue to audition Connor Zary at center. I think he has more upside than any of the potential centers in their system. And so if they agree with that, well, how do you find some shifts up the middle? What does it mean to Morgan Frost? What are you looking at? That kind of center position as a whole, including the looming threat of arbitration with Frost, very interesting to me.
That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. He's Wes Gilbertson on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Cam Hughes, our outstanding producer this hour, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale is on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.